I'd like to echo what Father Murr said. Thank you for all being here and helping us celebrate the Lord's Day. I'd also like to introduce myself in case there are some new students for the beginning of the school year and the school semester. I'm Deacon Charlie, and happy to be here. So I've been a deacon here for a little over a year, and beginning by really my second academic year. So I guess I'm in my sophomore year. The other thing I'd like to mention is that, you know, sometimes I talk to people out in the gathering space and explain that I'm a deacon and not a priest, because sometimes, you know, you see people up here in the vestments and it's hard to tell. If you don't know them, and if you go to visit a new church, you might not be sure which one's a priest, which one's a deacon. So I'll give you a little clue that is in our vestments. If you see somebody with sleeves, I have sleeves, then he's a deacon. And if you see a man up here with no sleeves, he's the priest. So always look for that. It's always easy to spot the deacon in the crowd. All right. Well, today the gospel is kind of shocking, kind of controversial, especially when we look at last week, where Jesus told Peter, "Simon, son of Jonah, you are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church." Now, Peter has gone from one moment receiving divine wisdom about who Jesus is, and the next moment he's being called Satan. So what does this mean for poor Peter? Well, Peter was given the keys to the kingdom and the power to bind and loose on earth and heaven, and he is the rock, the foundation upon which Christ will build his church. So he was given a vocation. Did this mean he would never make a mistake or never sin? No. And after this misstep, did he lose his vocation? Again, no. So let's look at what happened. Jesus began to tell his disciples about the journey ahead and the ultimate sacrifice that would be offered, complete with suffering and death, but on the third day he would be raised. Now, Peter probably panicked. He was not ready for this. And maybe he just didn't hear that last part about being raised on the third day, so he reacted very strongly. And thinking about it, you know, they just recognized out loud amongst themselves that the Son of the living God was among them, was teaching them. And now he's talking about dying way too soon. So Peter and all the disciples were not ready for this. I'm pretty sure that nobody stood up and said, "We got this." Jesus knew that Satan had put doubt and fear in the heart and mind of Peter, using Peter to put an obstacle in front of Jesus. Well, Satan was unsuccessful in tempting Jesus in the desert, so now he tries through Peter. In his response, Jesus is teaching Peter and the rest of us that when he focused on God, he sees and understands things that no man could see or understand using human wisdom. But when Peter is not focused on God and he thinks as human beings do, he becomes influenced by Satan. So while just before Peter was a foundation stone, now he's a stone that you might trip over. He's having trouble comprehending how and why the Son of God must die. So Peter had a moment of weakness, but he was still the foundation rock. And just like us, we have our vocations. For example, through the sacrament of matrimony, I have, like many of you, the vocation of being a spouse. Now, does that mean that as a husband, I don't make mistakes? No. And when I make mistakes, does that mean I lose my husband vocation? Again, no. Sometimes Satan puts fear and doubt in our hearts, trying to make us believe that we aren't worthy or we can't fulfill our vocation. And it's the same with my vocation as a deacon or a priest vocation or even the Pope's vocation. Day to day, we are not perfect, but overall, we are still called to the vocation. And with the grace of the sacraments of reconciliation and the Eucharist, we continue to love and follow Jesus. Now, the second part of the gospel is sometimes overshadowed by the drama of "Get behind me, Satan." Whoever wishes to come after me must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. So what does that mean to deny yourself and take up your cross? At that time, the disciples, in fact, all of the society, did not look upon the cross as we do today. Back then, the cross represented the most cruel and torturous death imaginable. It was the death of criminals. So Jesus is telling them where their life will end up if they follow him. He's giving them the roadmap to discipleship. Looking back at the first reading from Jeremiah, Jeremiah says, "You duped me, O Lord, and I let myself be duped." Jeremiah is complaining that God never gave him the roadmap. God didn't explain that being a prophet would lead to ridicule, abuse, and suffering, rejection by all, including family and friends. Jeremiah didn't realize that his love for God would put him in such conflict with the world. But when Jeremiah suffers as a prophet, does he turn away from his given vocation? No. So I think taking up the cross means that we look at our own life, look outside our own self-interest, and really desire the good of others without expecting something in return. To love others as Jesus loved. Love others when it's not easy to love them. Loving people who are outside your tight circle of family and friends, and minister on the margins with Christian love above the cultural values. St. Paul gives us some really beautiful advice about this today and a great comment about discernment. He says, "Do not conform yourselves to this age, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that you may discern the will of God, what is good and pleasing and perfect." So, the will of God, good and pleasing and perfect. This is so relevant for us today to stay true to our faith and not the latest fads or wisdom of the age. Offer our bodies as living sacrifice, thinking carefully how we feed our bodies physically and spiritually, how we use our bodies in service of Christ. This is meant for us together as a body of the church, to participate in the redemptive work of God through baptism and the Lord's Supper. Renew our minds to the will of God, not to the will of human beings. That might help to meditate on a few words of the Venerable Archbishop Fulton Sheen. He had a gift of phrasing things that had really short, concise statements with punch. Here's a couple of his thoughts. "Without the cross, there is no resurrection. Christianity is not easy, and grace is not cheap." Finally, I think Jesus is teaching us to not hold on too tight to life in this world at the expense of our eternal life with him. "For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. What profit would there be for one to gain the whole world and forfeit his life?" When we focus too much on this life rather than eternal life, we can hold on too tight. Just as Jesus said about denying yourself. But we do want to value and honor our life on earth. It is a gift from God. So how tight should we hold on? This is kind of a Goldilocks paradox. Well, I don't have a succinct answer with punch, but maybe I can conclude with an illustration from some experience in my life. Many years ago, I studied and practiced martial arts, which included learning the Japanese sword. It's called the katana. So when you were holding the katana, well, that was the first thing we had to learn how to do, how to hold it. If you're holding on too tight, then your motions will not be fluid and your cuts will not be clean, and you lose speed. And then when you clash your sword with your partner, you're holding on so tight that the shock really hurts your hands. But if you hold on too loose, you lose your accuracy. And if you clash swords with your partner, you might drop the sword, which is a really bad idea in a sword fight. So my teacher told us, hold it like a gummy bear. Not so tight that you crush the gummy bear, but tight enough so you don't drop the gummy bear. So when he taught this, I understood the principle, but I wasn't familiar with gummy bears. So I went out and bought some gummy bears. And I held them, and I squeezed it really tight, and I held it looser, and I got to understand what he meant, you know, through action. The concept went to action. And then I tasted a gummy bear. It was pretty good. So I learned that I like gummy bears. So when we hold on to this life tight enough to honor and respect the gift from God, but not so tight that we can't also reach out and share God's love with each other, then we can together seek eternal life with God. So tight enough to respect the gift, but not so tight that we can't reach out and share. Now, I don't know if I would call this homework, but feel free to go out and get some gummy bears, hold it, see how hard it takes to hold it and crush it and not drop it, and then taste it. But most importantly, then share it.